about the dispute with his ex-wife. The question comes up now, as it comes up so often. If someone in that salon had been carrying a gun, would the death toll be as high? Would the gunman now be among the dead? It's the argument that was put forward after the Columbine shootings. It was put forward after the Virginia Tech shootings. In fact, in so many cases of mass shootings, mass killings, people say if someone there had had a gun. Well, in the case of the shooting of Gabrielle Giffords, the Arizona congresswoman, someone did have a gun. And there are arguments on both sides about whether or not that did any good. The man who had a gun telling Fox News that he had it drawn, he had it ready, and then adding at one point that he just had a split second, almost shot the wrong guy, and saying that the reason that he was also concerned was that he didn't want police to confuse him as the second gunman. It may cut both ways. How does it sound to you, the argument that we hear so often, that if someone with a gun had been present during one of these mass shootings, that the catastrophe, the scale of the catastrophe, the number of dead would not have been as high as it is? 866-893-5722, so we can hear from you about this. As we know, of course, over the weekend, Governor Jerry Brown signed a bill that banned the open carry of handguns in California, making it a misdemeanor to do so. At about the same time, the state of Florida started taking down no firearm signs in county parks and elsewhere, because in Florida, it's now the job of the state, not local governments, to pass any laws regarding gun restrictions. 866-893-5722. You've always got something to say about this. Now is the time, in the wake of the shooting that left 8 people dead in that salon in Seal Beach. Would it have made a difference if someone in that salon, or maybe even someone working next door, had had a gun himself or herself? 866-893-5722. Already comments coming in on the Pat Morrison page. Deborah said, I don't believe the new law would have changed the outcome, meaning the Jerry Brown ban changed the outcome of this tragedy. The perpetrator would have had the gun regardless of whether he was allowed to carry it or not. We often hear that kind of argument. And let's see, we've got SoCal Engineer saying, I don't see how an average person with an open carried firearm could have prevented it if they were doing it legally. Legally, the firearm cannot be loaded. That's a question that's often brought up by people saying you have to be able to carry a loaded weapon to respond in time. So 866-893-5722 is how we can hear what you have to say about this, as we hear from my guests. John Lott is a gun rights advocate and the author of the book, More Guns, Less Crime, Understanding Crime and Gun Control Laws. Thank you, Mr. Lott, for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
And Adam Winkler is a constitutional law professor at UCLA. His book is entitled Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
So, Mr. Lott, here is another scenario where we hear arguments on both sides. Let's hear yours.
Right. Well, I mean, it's interesting you mentioned the Columbine case, for example. One thing that almost never gets mentioned there is that the two young killers that killed so many people that day had actually been lobbying their state legislators against the concealed carry law that was being considered by the Colorado legislature, and one of them was particularly upset about one part of the law that would have let permit holders carry guns on school properties. One thing that hasn't been mentioned is that the very day that the Columbine shooting occurred was the very same day that the Colorado legislature was scheduled for final passage of the right to carry law there.
Well, Mr. Lott, let's bring it up to date to the circumstances we're talking about here in California, because one of the arguments is about, as I said, is about the fact that anybody else who'd had a weapon might have taken this man out before he killed as many people as he did. And then on the other side, we have the example of Gabrielle Giffords, where there were people there with guns who were afraid, or said they nearly shot the wrong guy and were afraid themselves of being misidentified as the shooter by police.
Right. Well, I mean, it's pretty easy to go and look at that, because there's lots of cases where citizens with permit concealed handguns have stopped multiple victim public shootings. They've stopped them in churches. They've stopped them in restaurants. They've stopped them on city streets. You've had about a quarter of the public school shootings in K-12 stopped by citizens before uniformed police have been able to arrive. You've had a shooting at a university that's been stopped. And you can bring up possibilities about things that might go wrong. But I don't know one of those cases where one of the citizens who had a permit concealed handgun accidentally shot a bystander. I don't know in one of those cases where a police officer, when they finally arrived on the scene, accidentally shot the person who had a concealed handgun permit and used it to stop the attack there. If you just look at data rather than looking at these types of stories, Bill Landis, professor at the University of Chicago Law School, and I looked at all the multiple victim public shootings in the United States from right after World War II up until 1999. And we looked at 13 different types of gun control laws. We looked at lots of things that police can do. But the only thing that we were able to find that stopped these types of attacks was the passage of right to carry laws. When these laws, you saw about a 60% drop in the rate at which these attacks occur, about almost an 80% drop in the rate at which people are killed or injured. And to the extent to which these attacks occur, they overwhelmingly take place in those few areas within the state where permanent concealed handguns are allowed.
Mr. Lott, I wanted to get to some of our listeners, and starting with Andrew in Newport Beach, who sounds like he's agreeing with you. Andrew, go ahead.
Hey, I just want to say all these bans on firearms are absolute BS. Here's what you do. Anybody that wants to own one, they go through a course, and they learn how to use it. They learn how to use it really well. You got to go once a month to the range or whatever. And then once that guy walked into that salon, if there would have been one person carrying that was trained just a little bit, they would have heard that first pop go off, and they would have dumped a 10-round magazine in that guy quicker than you blink, you know? It could have saved maybe 6-7 people. You know, it sounds like somebody would have got shot, but I think that if you do a good background check and no felonies, no weird past, then I don't see why you can't have a concealed.
Andrew, let me ask you. You said raised an important question, which is about training and renewing training, which is not a requirement now for gun ownership in this country. How important do you think that is?
My dad's a cop. I was just talking to him today, and I said, "Dad, when's the last time you went to the range?" He said, "It's been a while." I was like, "So you feel comfortable carrying your firearm?" He's like, "I better get to the range, you know, because it's that one time that you use it." I think it's super important that you should have to go and shoot your firearm, because you're going to pull it out, you're going to shoot yourself in the foot, or you're going to shoot your kid, or you're going to shoot the wrong person.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, thank you. Andrew calling from Newport Beach, saying that, agreeing that if someone with training had been in that salon, then the shooter might have been taken out after the first shot, not after eight people lay dead. Adam Winkler, the author of Gunfight, I'd like you to speak to some of the points that we've been hearing, one of them regarding the level of skill that it takes to know what you're doing when you've got a gun, and the training that that we just heard Andrew recommend. And the earlier points Mr. Lott was raising about how he says that people who carry guns have prevented worse crimes.
Well, it's certainly the case that there have been incidents where people have been able to stop multiple victim shooters from killing more people. The difficulty in this kind of situation, though, is it's hard to rely on people in high-stress environments to fire accurately and to be dependable for public safety. We even know that very well-trained police officers, when they get into a shootout, have a lot of difficulty hitting a target. They shoot a lot of bullets that they don't need to shoot. When the adrenaline starts pumping, it's very difficult to shoot straight. And there are certainly the possibility of police coming in and being confused. But I do think there is something to the idea that if people have firearms, they can defend themselves. I don't think that it's likely that many people would have changed anything in this salon incident. It's unlikely that people sitting in a salon would have been carrying their guns or would have been able to react quickly enough. But it's really hard to know and hard to guess and speculate about that.
Let me read a few comments from the Pat Morrison page, where Beth says, "I don't think allowing people to carry guns will help in this situation. If everyone pulls a gun, you'll have bullets flying and more people will get hurt. Secondly," she says, "you might not know who the actual assailant is," which happened in the case of the Gabrielle Giffords shooting, as one man had taken away a gun from Gerald Loeffner. A second man who had a gun thought the man who had disarmed the gunman was in fact the gunman himself. Victor says, "I carry a gun, legal or not. It is registered, has never been fired out of a shooting range, but it's ready to be used in case it's needed." Jason from Altadena says, "You can't predict these things. Every gunman situation is too dynamic," suggesting that having more open carry gun owners out there would save lives is a fool. And Elle in Laverne says, "In the Wild West, people carried guns. That wasn't exactly the least violent time in our history. If the patrons also had guns," says Elle in Laverne, "it would have been a bloodbath." What do you think about the argument that we've been talking about, that had someone in that salon in Seal Beach, where eight people were shot down, had someone had a gun, they might have taken out the shooter, who, as it turns turns out, according to police, was wearing body armor, so only a headshot, not a torso shot, which many people are trained for, too, might have been effective there. Let's go to Los Angeles and hear from Joel. Thank you, Joel.
Hi. You know, I want to bring this maybe to the macro level. It's not just about a particular event where there's a shooting. Studies, I believe, out of the University of Chicago have statistically shown that in communities that pass concealed carry laws, violent crime drops significantly after the passage of those laws and stays down. And the reason being simply that criminals are more wary of committing these acts when they feel there may be honest citizens in their presence who could defend themselves and defend others. Maybe someone on your panel there can discuss these studies I'm referring to. I forget their exact...
Joel, thank you. Yes, and one of the cases that Joel brings up, the city of Kennesaw, Georgia, was requiring that heads of household have a gun. Adam Winkler, very quickly, can you speak to that, the point that Joel made, that crime, he says, goes down in communities where more people carry guns?
Of course, and I'd be remiss in not noting that the studies that he cites are studies by John Lott. So Mr. Lott certainly knows his stuff with regards to this. You know, John's study has... itself been the subject of a lot of study. His study did find that homicide dropped a considerable amount, about 8.5%, if I recall correctly, and some other violent crimes went down as well. The study, as I say, has been subject of many studies. There's been others who've said that if you change the data set a little bit to add a few more years, then you find no statistically significant effect on crime. I think actually probably all you can take from the dueling studies is that having people with concealed carry of firearms does not lead to the bloodbath that some gun control advocates think it will. Probably doesn't lead to remarkable differences in the number of people who are going to be killed or victimized by gun violence.
When we come back after the break, we'll hear from John Lott and from you, too, at 866-893-5722 as we examine the idea about whether or not if someone in that salon in Seal Beach had a gun, the gunman could not have killed as many people as he did. 866-893-5722 or the Pat Morrison page. Already a load of comments. You can add yours there, too. And you can add your voice, your help to KPCC. Right, guys?
That's right. Thanks, Pat. Frank Stoltz here along with Lauren Osen. What a wonderful discussion. It's another provocative topic on Pat Morrison where we delve into these questions of public policy, of public safety in this case as well. Contribute to this kind of programming at kpcc.org.
It's very rare that you find this kind of a conversation with this many voices and opinions coming together in one place to have a discussion about it. That's the kind of discussion that's facilitated by Pat Morrison and made possible by your support of KPCC. KPCC isn't just on the air anymore. It's also in the Crawford Family Forum, like at the Veterans a discussion that Frank will be leading.
That's
next
right.
Sunday, I think it is. You can
this coming Sunday, 2 p.m.,
in,
Crawford
come,
Family Forum. We're discussing vets issues.
And meet Frank and see him lead this discussion. And you can also tune in every day and hear Pat and call in and give your opinion or go on the kpcc.org website and give your opinion there. You can also give while you're there at kpcc.org. Check out all the different gifts that we have to thank you for pitching in what you can or pick up the phone at 866-888-5722.
21 listeners to go. Won't you be one of them? Thanks so much to Arlene Crabtree from Long Beach, renewing her membership and making it a sustaining membership. That's where you pick a monthly amount that you're comfortable with, and then it's just set and ready to go. You don't have to worry about it until you want to change it. And you're automatically entered in each and every giveaway. 866-888-5722.
And that amount that you choose, whatever works for you, maybe it's $10 a month, maybe it's $15 a month, you choose it, you set that amount, you forget about it, and it continues to keep KPCC strong. You can take home a variety of premiums that we're offering this drive. It's the first time we're offering the KPCC Orange Acrylic Cup. It's about the size of a venti or a big gulp, and it allows you to take any beverage on the go with you. It's plastic. It's BPA free. So it keeps you healthy, keeps you hydrated. That could be yours for just $15 a month. We're offering the Procrastinators package. So you can take home not only that cup, but also the bright orange KPCC grocery bag. Great for trick or treating. Great for that plastic bag ban that is going into effect across the state slowly.
Help us meet our goal for this hour. This is one of the last times to show your support for Pat Morrison. 866-888-5722.
We've only got about 40 minutes left in the hour with Pat Morrison. Pitch in your fair share, whatever amount you think is right, but put a price on that. Think about how often you come to KPCC, how often KPCC gives you a little nugget of conversation around the water cooler or at the dinner table or at the bar. KPCC.org or 866-888-5722.
Rita Turner, Carol Stein, Jane Yen, David Jackson, Nicole Hill. I could go on and on. Many people have jumped in to support KPCC. No one's giving a bazillion dollars. Everybody's just chipping in. That's how it works. Listeners like you, the single largest source of support for KPCC. Contribute now at 866-888-5722.
It's very important to note, Frank, that listeners are our largest source of funding because
Congress
is, duly noted. Congress is continuing to debate the future of funding for public broadcasting. And we currently pay $1.1 million in dues to NPR for programs like Morning Edition and All Things Considered and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And it takes money to pay for that. We don't get very much from Congress as it is, and the future of that funding is unclear. So we need to hear from you. Do your part, kpcc.org or 866-888-5722. And thanks so much.
KPCC supporters include First Congregational Church of Los Angeles, presenting the 78th Annual Los Angeles Bach Festival, beginning on Sunday, October 16th at 3, as organist Frederick Swan plays on the great organs of First Church in his farewell performance. Mr. Swan's program will begin with J.S. Bach, followed by Bach-inspired pieces by Mendelssohn, Brahms, Schumann, and Liszt. Info at fccla.org.
National University, an accredited educational institution that offers more than 100 degree, credential, and certificate programs to busy people with year-round registration, a one-course-per-month format, and more than 60 programs that can be completed entirely online. National University is dedicated to making lifelong learning opportunities accessible, challenging, and relevant to a diverse student population. Learn more at nu.edu.
This is 89.3 KPCC. Good afternoon. I'm Hetty Lynn Hurdies. Some people familiar with the Seal Beach Beauty Salon, where a gunman killed eight people and wounded another yesterday, say one person who died was the owner of the salon. Cindy, who didn't offer her last name, sobbed as she remembered first going to the salon 25 years ago.
I've been with Randy for a long time. He's just a nice man. Michelle was a mom, was her ex-husband.
The LA Times identifies Randy as Randy Fannin, an owner of the salon Meritage. Police say a gunman shot most of his victims inside the business. He also killed one person in a car outside the salon. The shooter is in custody after officers arrested him half a mile from the crime scene. Seal Beach Acting Police Chief Tim Olson says he'll reveal the names of the victims at a news conference tomorrow morning. There'll be a vigil tonight at 8 at the salon. It's 226.
I'm Pat Morrison. That mass killing in the salon in Seal Beach raises the question again. So many people bring it up, and other people dispute it, that had someone in that salon had a gun, that they could have shot the gunman before he killed more than perhaps one or two people, that the gunman would be one of the casualties today. The gunman was wearing body armor, which of course means that a chest target that's often used would not perhaps have worked in this case. But we go to the argument about whether or not carrying guns, having guns carried around by private citizens, does make a difference in crime rates, can be used to stop something like this. The question of whether or not people are trained well enough to think clear-headedly and shoot clearly and directly in circumstances like this was brought up by one of our callers and by a number of listeners here. We want to hear from you as you ponder this tragedy and think whether people carrying guns themselves might have kept it from being as bad as it was. 866-893-KPCC. In the United States, the gun ownership rate is about 89 per 100 Americans, nearly twice the next country, Serbia, 58, and nearly three times what it is in Canada. Canada. There are, by estimates, between 260 and 300 million guns in the United States, nearly one per person. So let's hear from you about this theory that comes up every time there's a mass killing, like Virginia Tech. Had someone with a gun been there to take out the shooter, the casualty rate would not have been what it is. Do you agree? Do you disagree? And why? 866-893-5722. Pat's calling us from Costa Mesa. Thank you, Pat.
Hi. I had two comments. First of all, both sides want to refer to crime studies to talk about whether the laws prevent or increase crime or whatever. But the kind of individual that committed this thing yesterday doesn't show up on crime statistics. This guy wasn't a career criminal, and that's true for most mass shootings like this. And the other thing is if you agree with that, then when you bottom line is nothing could have prevented that except somebody having a weapon on site. That man walked outside and shot another man in a truck. He could have kept shooting. The cops picked him up half a mile away. Nothing could stop it unless somebody had a weapon. Yes, things could go wrong, but a lot of good things could have gone right, too.
So, Pat, you're saying that it would have been a good idea for someone in the salon to be armed?
Yes, I do, and my wife uses that salon. I live about 2 miles down the road in Sunset Beach.
So this has really hit home for you?
Yes, it has, and up until this time, I would have never considered carrying a weapon. But when you get all the other stuff out of the way, the only thing that could prevent that man, body armor or not, was somebody else having a weapon. The police aren't going to get there till well after the fact.
Pat, how likely, again, and this is a point that that my other guest, Adam Winkler, brought up, how likely is it that you, one in a how many million chance that someone would come into a salon or a hardware store where you find yourself versus the risk to that gun being being at home, being carried around, going off, being misused?
Well, again, if you look at the statistics, and I have to confess, I know some of them. I'm a Vietnam vet. I know how hard it is to shoot somebody. And even in that kind of situation, it's difficult to actually hit anything.
Mm-hmm.
In the kind of situation we're talking about yesterday, it's probably next to impossible. But if my wife had been in the salon that day, I pray to God somebody would have had a weapon.
Pat, thank you. Pat in Costa Mesa said his wife goes to the salon where so many people were killed in Seal Beach yesterday. And he has different thoughts about different aspects of this. First, John Lott, he said, look, he was in Vietnam. He was trained to use a weapon. He himself is not sure that anybody, even with the kind of training he's talking about, could have taken this man out.
Right. Well, I have to say, I think the caller made some excellent points. One thing of doing this research over the last couple decades is I've literally met several dozen people who have been present at these types of attacks, and the feeling of utter helplessness that they feel when they have no place to hide, police aren't there, could be a half hour or more for police to arrive. One of the things that Bill Landis and I found is that exactly what this caller said, and that is, what determines how many people get killed or injured in these attacks is the amount of time that elapses between when these attacks start and someone's able to arrive there on the scene with the gun. The longer the amount of time, the more carnage you're going
to
have.
Mr. Lott, what I'd like you to speak to is the point that, because I'm going to get to the pro-gun arguments that Pat made when I talked to Mr. Winkler, but right now what I'd like you to speak to is the question that Pat brought up about training, how people simply aren't trained, they aren't required to be trained, and you hear shots, you pull a gun out of your bag or your briefcase, and you start shooting, and you don't know who you're going to hit, including the guy you may be aiming for. What about those questions of not just having a gun, but being able to use it correctly when so many police officers even go wild?
Right. Well, I thought I'd address this earlier, but I'll try again, and that is we have a lot of experience. We have 41 states that have right to carry laws. We only have one state that completely bans people being able to carry concealed. We've seen lots of these types of instances where these types of crimes or multiple victim public shootings have been stopped. We can go and talk about hypothetical things that might go wrong, but I think it's better to look at the data to see what we actually see.
All right. Let's go then to Adam. Excuse me, Mr. Lott. I want to go to Adam Winkler while we have the time about the arguments that Pat made, who said, look, he wouldn't have thought of it before, but after what happened in that salon where his wife got her hair done, he absolutely thinks carrying a gun is a good idea.
Well, I don't think that's a surprise at all. I think whenever someone is victimized by a crime or someone in their community is victimized by a crime, it makes the rest of us think, hey, I need to do a little bit more to defend ourselves. And the truth is if someone comes around with a gun, about the only thing you can do to defend yourself is probably to shoot that person. So one thing I would like to comment on is, though,
sure, quickly.
We're assuming that no one in Seal Beach had a gun. It's almost like this is the only guy in Seal Beach with a gun. But with 280 million guns in America, I think it's unlikely that there was no one else around there with a gun. I bet that there was someone else without a gun who probably didn't want to use it.
A lot of you are calling in. Let's hear from some of you. Autumn is on the 405 freeway. Thank you, Autumn.
Thank you. Yes, I just wanted to make the point. You know, we've been hearing that he was wearing body armor. So to me, it seems very far-fetched to think that he didn't beforehand think about the eventuality that someone in the beauty salon could have a gun. He obviously prepared for that. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been, you know, in the body armor. So to me, that kind of shoots a hole, no pun intended, in the thought that this would have, you know, maybe changed his behavior. And the second thing is that I've heard in the newspaper that he was bipolar and had several, you know, assaults in his background with family members. And I just have to wonder about, you know, about our ability to monitor people with psychiatric issues who pass that initial test.
And yet at the same time, Autumn, a lot of listeners are making the point that if you may not qualify legally to buy a gun, there are lots of illegal ways to do it. That doesn't seem to stop people.
No, it doesn't seem to stop people. But, I mean, have we heard that this man had an illegal gun?
As far as I know, no. There's been a question raised about his PTSD. He witnessed a fatal accident aboard a fishing boat that he worked on and was suffering from this. But I know we're going to be hearing more on the news and reading more about the gun and the gunman in the Seal Beach Salon case, which is why we're talking to you about the philosophical argument of whether more people carrying guns might prevent things like this from happening, as rare as they are, or whether that carrying process of more people carrying guns creates more problems than it might solve. Let's hear from Phil, who is in Pasadena. Thank you, Phil.
Hi, Pat. I just want to first say thank you so much for everything you do in KPCC. You guys are awesome.
Thank you.
The point I want to make is that draconian gun laws, the ones that we have here in California, that prevent many people from owning certain type of guns and from having concealed carry licenses, they only prevent law-abiding citizens from carrying these guns. They don't prevent criminals. And yes, I understand in this case, perhaps the man wasn't a criminal, but it doesn't, these laws don't prevent anyone from going down to Chinatown, picking up a handgun or a semi-automatic rifle, or even an AK-47 if they really want to. And let me tell you, I went to college in LA, and I've been down to Chinatown, and you certainly can do that. And the fact that you're going to have these laws for law-abiding citizens not to be able to level the playing field between themselves and criminals.
So, Phil, excuse me, if someone in that salon had a gun, had had it legally without a problem, do you think that they could have stopped this man?
I'm not going to say that they could have, honestly, because from what I understand, the shooting went down in less than a minute. He was able to shoot 67 people, so there wasn't a long time between him pulling out the gun and then shooting a bunch of people. So if you have your gun in your pocket or in a holster or in some type of concealed carry, it's unlikely that you would be able to pull it out, target acquire, and then be able to squeeze off enough rounds to be able to get this guy's head down and whatnot. Perhaps they might have been able to save one or two.
Mm-hmm.
He probably still would have shot a good amount of people. They may have been able to save one or two. But like your guest said, in many, many cases, 25-30%, which is a very large, very large percentage. These cases have shown that people with concealed carry licenses are able to stop these mass murders. And it's honestly like if you're going to have 30% of that and the data shows that, why are you preventing law-abiding citizens from being able to carry? If you don't have
okay, Phil. Phil, excuse me, in the interest of time, I want to move on. Phil gets back to his point that he says banning law-abiding citizens from carrying guns creates a more dangerous dangerous situation than having guns would dictate. Nick in Long Beach, though, says when you have a proliferation of guns, the likelihood is that they will use the gun instead of the fist. Comments about Israel and the carrying of weapons there, the ownership, private ownership in Israel, about 7 people out of 100 own private guns. But of course, there's a much more formidable military presence in the streets of Israel. We have a formidable presence of your comments on the Pat Morrison page about whether or not more people owning and carrying guns would have meant fewer deaths in that salon in Seal Beach yesterday. My thanks so much to my guests, Adam Winkler, who's a constitutional law professor at UCLA, author of the book Gunfight, John Lott himself, an author of the book More Guns, Less Crime, information about them on the Pat Morrison page, where you can have your say as well. And on the Pat Morrison page, in fact, any place at kpcc.org, you have a chance to do some good.
Lauren Olson and Frank Stoltzer, we were both about to speak there. We are in the midst of our